the plague of unbelief. Of the many heresies and rebellions that marked the age of apostasy, one of the most notable is the plague of unbelief. Perpetrated by Cardinal Bucaris, it serves as a constant reminder to the ecclesiarchy and its clergy that power can corrupt those who wield it. It is the lament of the ecclesiarchy that Bucaris's zeal, determination, and courage could not have been turned to the betterment of humanity rather than his own advancement. The apostate cardinal. A few decades after Sebastian Thor's ascension to the ecclesiarchal throne, Cardinal Bucaris headed a diocese centered on Gathalamor, to the galactic southwest of Earth. Gathalamor was not a rich diocese, but Bucaris, driven by jealousy of his peers' achievements, vowed to build one of the largest temples to the Emperor's glory on his cardinal planet. After brutally enslaving the population of Gathalamor, Bucaris still needed more men and resources. Using an army of thugs and cutthroats, he conquered the nearby world of Randar. With access to the richer mines of that world, Bucaris's wealth grew. It was also in the Randar system that Bucaris joined forces with the renegade Navy Admiral Sahala and a colonel of the Regellian 25th Imperial Guard Regiment called Gasto. With Imperial Guardsmen and Navy warships at his disposal, Bucaris carved out a small empire to the galactic west of Earth, and within the next 7 years, 50 star systems had fallen under his control. Bucaris's realm was cut off from much of the Imperium by a dense concentration of warp storms, and news of Sebastian Thor's ascension and the reorganization of the ecclesiarchy had not yet filtered through. As Bucaris now controlled interstellar travel in his empire, he continued to suppress any information regarding the events on Earth. Bucaris announced that the ecclesiarchy had fallen, corrupted by traitors and heretics. Using evidence from the time of Vandaya, he declared himself the true mouth of the emperor and declared himself the head of the Adeptus Ministorum. To those who heard his elegant speeches, Earth was a lost cause, and Gathalamor was the centre of faith from then on. The plague of unbelief spread, and Bucaris's teachings became the word of law. Every man must endeavour to help himself. Those who cannot do so are less than human and a burden to mankind. They must be cast aside, was a popular quote from the cardinal, met with thunderous applause wherever he finished sermons. People were taught to look after themselves before any other consideration, to ensure their own survival. That was how the human race would endure, by each member striving for their own advancement. The weak would be left behind, and only the strong would remain. Mankind's ascendancy would be ensured by these doctrines. The worlds under Bucaris's control became intolerable places, filled with looting gangs and power-hungry nobles. Neighbour fought against neighbour, and families split over the spoils of the chaos. Those who rose to prominence amidst such turmoil caught the eye of Bucaris and were rewarded with more power. Companies of mercenary guards were dispatched to enforce order in the name of Bucaris, led by those fortunate enough to have Bucaris's favour. Those who served the apostate cardinal were suitably rewarded, and those who failed him were appropriately punished. In this way, Bucaris' dominion spread north and west. Cautious of approaching too close to Earth until his power was total, Bucaris forged his bloody path ever northwards. To the south, he stopped just short of the navy base at Bacca, fearing that Sahala's fleet would draw unwelcome attention from the squadron stationed there. To the north, he drew a wide berth around Cadia and the Eye of Terra, terrified that his hard-won domain would attract the attention of Chaos Space Marines. With almost every system consolidated under his rule over the vast tract of space, he moved on. There were more Imperial Guard regiments that joined Gasto's mercenaries, believing Bucaris' story of the fall of the Ecclesiarchy and the Adeptus Terra to be true, the ships of Battlefleet Pacificus on Hydrophor bowed to the apostate Cardinal's command. Bucaris was almost ready to take on the might of Terra itself, hoping surprise and cunning would outmatch the superiority of arms held by his enemies. Fortunately, Bucaris was to make a grave error. The continuing northerly advance of Bucaris brought him into territories under the protection of the Space Wolves. Along with almost every other Space Marine chapter, the Space Wolves had elected to protect their founding world and patrol only the nearest systems. When Bucaris's immense fleet dropped from the warp to envelop the Albia system, it encountered the Space Wolves' cruiser Claw of Ras, as it was preparing to leave. After a brief battle, during which a navy cruiser and a transport ship were destroyed, the Space Wolves jumped into the warp and escaped. Bucaris's arrogance cost him dearly. He dismissed the encounter with the Space Wolves as a freak chance, and soon was conquering more systems in the sector. However, the fifth system he dropped into after the battle held more than he bargained for. It was the star system containing Fenris, the home planet of the Space Wolves. Almost as soon as Bucaris' fleet disengaged their warp engines, the Space Wolves' war fleet attacked. Although outnumbered and outgunned by the larger navy ships, the Space Marines tore through much of Bucaris' fleet before racing back in system. From there, they continued to launch hit and run attacks for the rest of the war. Despite two-thirds of his fleet being kept occupied with the Space Wolves ships, Bucaris managed to launch an assault on Fenris itself. Many of the huge transport ships were destroyed by the raging storms in the upper atmosphere, while others were shot down by the defense laser batteries of the Space Wolves fortress. However, a landing zone was established, and thousands of renegade Imperial Guardsmen poured onto the ice world. Despite the adversity of the conditions, the bloodthirsty warriors under Bucaris' command vowed to exact revenge on the Space Wolves for their lost comrades. Captured Fenrisians were enslaved and put to work providing materials for Bucaris' army. They were forced to lay makeshift roads across the treacherous glacial flats and made to cut down the huge trees of Fenris's forests to provide fuel for fires and the versatile engines of the Imperial Guard tanks. However, the Fenrisians were not easily tamed, and they had to be guarded closely, lest they try to rise against Bucaris and strike at the army where it would be most damaging. Whole communities were slaughtered, and a few scattered farms were butchered for Bucaris and his officers to feast upon. The women were enslaved, and the young and old were slaughtered, and left for the large carrion crows that circle the skies of the inhospitable world. Bucaris' advance continued, and his huge columns inexorably ground towards the Fang, until the ancient citadel was surrounded. More troops were transported to the system, and though many carriers were destroyed by the Space Wolves' fleet with hit-and-run attacks, the valleys and mountainsides around the fortress swarmed with legions of the apostate Cardinal. Massive siege guns pounded day and night, the dark skies illuminated with thousands of flares and the coruscating energies of void shields. Explosions shook the mountain of Asaheim, causing more avalanches and destruction. Salvos from orbiting ships gouged chasms into the steep slopes, and yet the armored walls of the Fang endured. Sallies and counterattacks by the Space Wolves smashed the traitor siege works and annihilated their immense cannons. Surprise assaults by Wolf Scouts disrupted the supply lines, and for months on end, the guns would fall silent for want of ammunition. Using hidden passages, riddling the mountains, and linking all of Asaheim to the Fang, the Space Wolves penetrated deep into the enemy army. Screaming blood-curdling cries, the Blood Claws would attack the soldiers of Bucaris in the darkness of Fenris's forests, ripping their foes apart with their teeth and hands to conserve ammunition and power packs. Long fangs ambushed the mile-long tank convoys, often blowing apart entire mountain valleys to crush the enemies of the Space Wolves beneath a storm of immense rock and rubble. Dreadnoughts smashed their way into the heart of the marching columns, leaving a path of desolation in their wake. Week after week, month after month, the siege dragged on. Bucaris sent suicidal assaults against the armored entrances to the Fang, promising riches beyond avarice for the first men to break through. Every time the forces of Bucaris attacked, the Space Wolves repelled them, inflicting horrifying casualties. For 3 bloody years, the siege continued. Attack after attack, bombardment after bombardment, fell against the walls and gates of the Fang. And yet, the Citadel remained unbreached. Bucaris drew in more and more soldiers, until even his forces on distant Gethalamor were at a quarter of their normal strength. Believing his domain secure, he mustered his armies for one last assault to sweep all resistance before him. Fate intervened once more, but this time to deal a blow to Bucaris's plans. Out beyond the furthest planet in the system, reality tore itself apart as a war fleet emerged from the warp. As Bucaris's own vessels investigated, they were confronted by an armada of Space Wolves battle barges returning to their home planet. The Space Wolves lost no time in attacking, smashing nearly half of Bucaris's fleet in their first strike. Caught between the newcomers and the attack of the remaining Space Wolves vessels from the center of the system, Admiral Sahala ordered a withdrawal. Wasting no time in pursuit, the Space Wolves powered towards Fenris. The counterattack by Kerel Grimblood's great company killed tens of thousands of traitor guardsmen in the first week. They were hurled from the mountain passes, and those who survived to reach the flats of Asaheim still perished. Giant wolf packs and vicious climate killed each and every invader. The apostate cardinal managed to escape on a shuttle and link with Sahala, who dropped back out of the warp briefly to rendezvous with his fellow conqueror. Leaving Fenris to the Space Wolves, Bucaris pulled back his northern forces and consolidated his hold on the rest of his domain. Turmoil on Kyros. With Bucaris' attention focused on Fenris, the continued expansion of his empire had been slowed but not stopped. He had many sub-commanders still exploring westwards, and many systems had fallen into his clutches during the Battle of the Fang. However, reports began to come through of setbacks suffered in one newly discovered system, Kyros. Kyros was not a poor or desolate world like Gethalamor or Rana. It was a world of continent-spanning forests, deep lakes and rolling grassland that boasted a population of a few million people. Most of Kyros's wealth came from the luxury goods it exported. Exotic furs, startling elixirs and narcotics distilled from the native flora and fauna, and other rare indulgences. Bucaris could not understand why such a pampered planet would risk annihilation by opposing him. Abandoning his conquests within easy reach of Fenris, Bucaris ordered his fleet and army back to Gathalamor, while he considered the problem. The apostate cardinal heard that despite horrendous carnage on the world of Kyros, the Kyrosians were no closer to surrender. The commander in charge of the assault had wisely restrained the use of the more destructive weapons in his arsenal, fearing that he would scar the beautiful planet, which would make an ideal retreat for the aging cardinal. Bucaris was pleased with the commander's foresight and sent him three extra companies of men, confident that these reinforcements would soon be hunting the abundant game of Kyros, chasing down the prey over the rolling hills of the natural paradise. It was not to be. The mercenary captain attacking Kyros regretfully reported his surrender to the Kyrosians. Bucaris was stunned. He knew the Imperial Guard were not the most elite fighters of the Imperium, but a whole regiment of them should have been easily capable of defeating whatever meager forces Kyros had to offer. Bucaris's agents returned from the system to make more detailed reports. The mercenaries had not faced a few hundred poorly armed, badly motivated defenders. The whole population had risen up against them, each with his hunting rifle and other weapons. Millions of marksmen had riddled the hills and forests, ambushing the guardsmen and gunning them down in droves, before using the hunting trails and lodges to disappear into the wilderness once more. The whole countryside was hostile. There were no supplies. There was no respite. And when a suicide squad had charged into the heart of the captain's camp and detonated homemade explosives, the army lost the will to fight on. The road to Gathalamor. Soon after Kyros, another world managed to successfully rebel. The mining planet of Guyan. The miners had cut down their guards with drills and hammers, clambering over a mound of their own dead to strangle their foes with the chains of their shackles. After Guyan came Dulcea, then Vorst. The rebellions were cutting a path through Bucaris' domain, straight towards Gathalamor. On Colchia, Bulgaris laid an ambush, and when a small fleet appeared from the warp, it was attacked and almost entirely destroyed. However, a single shuttle managed to reach the planet's surface. Weary of the shuttle that had landed, the overall commander, Frederick Kirst, kept his men and tanks on full alert. The waiting dragged on into a month, then 2 months, 3 months, half a year. A year later, almost to the day, the quiet farmers of Colchia went berserk. They burnt the crop fields, stormed the local barracks with crude shotguns and farming tools, losing 3/4 of their number before overwhelming the enemy. They stampeded their vast herds of gigantic ghoul beasts into tank companies, crashing the war machines under a thunderous storm of house-sized animals. They dammed the rivers and flooded the towns where Kirst's men were billeted, sweeping away their own homes. Even the elderly and young children hurled makeshift grenades made from the local distilled fuel, setting light to the air vents of Lehman Russ tanks and choking the crew inside. All across both continents, the people of Colchia stopped at nothing to rid themselves of their enslavers. Push from Colchia, and then Lima Rogan, Trodor, and a score of other worlds, Bucaris' coffers began to empty more rapidly than they could be filled. Many of his soldiers deserted, and there was infighting and dissension, even within the higher ranks of his army. And still, the revolt continued, like an arrow aimed at the heart of the apostate cardinal. Finally, Methelor, the closest system to Gethelamor, fell. Its principal hive destroyed by a raging inferno started by the inhabitants overloading its geothermal power grid. Bucaris doubled the cordon on his own system and ordered every vessel to be stopped and searched. Not long after the fall of Methelor, a messenger arrived at the Cardinal Palace on Gethelamor. With a defiant look and a stern voice, the messenger proclaimed himself the envoy of Confessor Dolan Kirosius. Confessor Dolan called for the immediate surrender of Bucaris. The Cardinal was ordered to resign his position and throw himself on the mercy of the Emperor. Most importantly, he was to renounce his heresies and apostate idea of self-deliverance. The Great Confessor. The messenger's remains were nailed to the gates of the palace, where the rats and crows feasted upon them. Confessor Dolan would be coming to Gethelamor soon, and Bucaris wanted his slaves to have their first glimpse of their saviour, to be one of a man bound with chains and whipped through the streets. Soon enough, Dolan's shuttle was boarded and the confessor was taken into custody, charged with various acts of heresy and treason against the Emperor. As Bucaris had promised, Dolan was chained and driven through the streets. Soldiers from his army whipped the confessor with flails and hurled stones at him. They stuck hooks into his flesh and hung them with weights, driving him onwards with kicks and punches. However, the crowd that lined the streets were sullen and weary. There were no cheers, but there were no cries of condemnation either. Dolan was dragged across the continent in this way, his journey filled with over 6 months of constant torture and torment. He was not allowed to sleep. He was starved and had but a mouthful of fetid water a day to survive on. Yet, all the while, his fiery stare was not dimmed, and he never once bowed his head to the blows of his persecutors. Bucaris ordered a public trial of Dolan, charging him with blasphemy and heresy, along with other crimes of treachery, sedition, and rebellion. He needed Dolan dead, but Bucaris didn't want to provide the desperate people under his heel with a martyr. Dolan would be humiliated and scorned, found guilty of the charges against him. Only when he was proved to be the enemy of mankind would he die, painfully and over a long period of time. The trial was broadcast across Bucaris' domain, so that those who witnessed the event would be in no doubt as to its validity. Of course, Bucaris had no thought of giving Confessor Dolan a fair hearing, but to the masses it had to be made to appear so. Following all the correct procedures and precedents, Dolan and hundreds of others were questioned and cross-examined. Dolan agreed to conduct his own defence, and when, after 5 long months, the prosecution had compiled his work, 1,000 worlds waited in anticipation. Dolan explained how he had preached to the people of Kyros, explaining the tyranny of Bucaris and decrying the apostate cardinal's false doctrines. He instilled them with the will to fight for freedom, rousing the townsfolk and hunters with his fiery speeches. With his own testimony, this power was witnessed. His eyes burned with religious zeal. He gesticulated wildly to punctuate his thoughts, and his manner reached into the soul of everyone who watched and grabbed it tightly. He was a fierce man, some would say insane, yet he was loyal to the Emperor and his teachings. He would suffer any sacrifice and indignity to see Bucaris toppled, and he passed on that fervent hatred to all those who listened to him. For 3 days Dolan spoke, declaring how he had whipped up the grain harvesters of Belly 16 to drive their massive scythed machines into the enemy camps, though they would be killed in doing so. He led the Pharidites as they charged the immortal tower, spurring them on when over 9,000 of their number fell to the minefields and defensive cannons. It was a speech from him that so incensed the population of Resto Primis, they overloaded the geothermal power network, cracking apart the planet's continents with a wave of volcanic eruptions and earthquakes. "What matter?" he cried, as his crushed hands formed fists raised before him. "If a home is lost, or even a world destroyed, if the sacrifice means the end to evil and the heresies of the Emperor's worst foes." At the end of the long tirade, Bucaris spoke. He explained that Dolan's own testimony had condemned him, that he had freely admitted to all the grievous acts and crimes he stood accused of. He had not denied a single charge. The Cardinal addressed his followers, reiterating Dolan's flagrant opposition to the true authority of the Ecclesiarchy. He called Dolan and his followers anarchists and idolaters, a threat to the stability of the entire Imperium. Dolan's acts of rebellion and heresy left him no choice but to order the confessor's execution. Appealing for mercy of the Emperor upon Dolan's soul, he commanded his men to take him to the dungeons. For almost 8 long months, Dolan endured unknown torment at the hands of Bucaris's torturers. When at last he died, his body was flung from the walls of the palace for the scavenging dogs and birds to feast upon. His body had been maimed beyond recognition. Hideous scars and burns marred his flesh, telling a tale of great pain and misery. Despite the horrendous torments inflicted upon his body, Dolan's face exuded a calm serenity, and peace lay like an aura across his corpse. Those who saw it wept openly, even though any who exhibited such grief were themselves accused of heresy and put to death. The Carrion Eaters never had their banquet. Dolan's body disappeared shortly after and was never found. The death of a tyrant. Bucaris' plan to shame the confessor wildly backfired. In allowing the confessor to speak, he had given Dolan the means to spread his message further across the stars than it ever would have done otherwise. When the confessor's death was announced, Bucaris' domain erupted into revolt. Almost as one, the populations of 1,000 worlds attacked their cruel overseers. Inspired by the sacrifice of the great confessor, millions of men, women, and children faced the guns of their foes with their bare hands. Bucaris's palace itself was stormed, and traitors within his own ranks opened the gates to allow the faithful to gain their vengeance. As his few loyal servants held back the human tide that poured through the passages and halls, destroying everything in its path, Bucaris fled. Using a network of tunnels, he made his way to the spaceport, where he intended to board the next shuttle leaving, and desert everything he had built up to preserve his own life. Again, his own closest followers betrayed him, hoping to save themselves from the savagery of the mob. Warned of Bucaris's imminent departure, the inhabitants of Gathalamor surrounded the spaceport. They threw themselves at its electrified walls until the generator short-circuited. Bucaris never reached his ship. The mob found him even as he was boarding, swallowed up in a mass of hundreds of thousands of slaves crying for revenge. He was torn apart. His body was never recovered. But when the mass of repressed citizens dispersed, the scattered ashes of a fire were all that were left to mark the place of his demise. These are the important events of the Age of Apostasy. Others occurred, but are of less importance. The Ecclesiarchy now is a fundamental part of the Imperium, holding it together, one might say, spiritually and temporally. With the return of the Primarch Gilliman, this position has been called into doubt, considering our Lord Commander's stance on religious matters, being a child of the era of the Imperial Truth, before the Great Heresy, and during the Great Crusade. the vast majority of the Primaris that exist in our galaxy under his command, of course, are also childs of this decadent age before all accepted the godhood of the Emperor. In order to facilitate a better working relationship, a new post was created to stand alongside the Primarch, the Militant Apostolic, to allow the Lord Gilliman and the Ecclesiarchy to better work together and to ensure that each's authority was accepted amongst their various organisations. To his credit, the Lord Gilliman himself instigated this post, seeing how the universe was and the existence of the Imperial Church. The current holder is one Matthew, although a number of others were considered, but were found to be too zealous in their beliefs. Although the current occupant isn't much better, let's be frank. The Wars of Vengeance occurred at the same time as the Age of Apostasy, and a history of those events has been sent to you previously, as well as a report of the revelations of the Anchorite and its place in the formation of the Ecclesiarchy. Troubling, to say the least. Further historical records will be sent to you in good time. I am considering compiling a complete history of the Imperium from the fall of Cadia to our present era, concentrating upon the Indomitus Crusade and our Lord Commander Gilliman's role within it. Until then, may the Emperor protect. Regards, Inquisitor A.B. Prince. Thanks for watching, everybody. Hope you've enjoyed this history of the Ecclesiarchy. I think it's a really important thing that doesn't get the attention it deserves, and it's pretty hardcore, really, compared to a lot of stuff before you go, on a visceral level, if you think about it. I'll be back for more very, very soon. I'm working on stuff all the time. If you would like to subscribe to stay up to date with what's happening on the channel, please do that. Please do like this video and let me know in the comments below what you thought of this. Yeah, I will be back for more soon. Thanks to everybody supporting the channel. You can see your names here. And yeah, I'll see you again soon. Cheers.